What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It also is jarring, I think, for the senators to finally have a different generation to deal with.
Yeah.
Right. The age difference of the senators and the nominees is quite stark and noticeable, and the energy level is right there.
Dana Perino highlighting something that I've been paying close attention to. I'm on that old elder millennial side of the generational breakdown here, but seeing people, even J.D. Vance is like a month younger than me or something like that. We've gone from watching Joe Biden muddle through this presidency to now seeing this cabinet see confirmation hearing after confirmation hearing with people that are an entirely, don't just look like an entirely different generation. They represent an entirely different generation. And we are just a couple short days away from watching the remaking of America, hopefully back to what it was supposed to be. I'm excited to bring on our next guest, Will Kane. You know him as host of The Will Kane Show here on 97.1 FM Talk from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. But also very exciting to forward the information to you that The Will Kane Show will now debut on Fox News at 3 p.m. Central Time starting January 21st. Will, thank you for the time today. A lot of news going on, and we appreciate you squeezing in some time here for our audience.
You bet, Annie. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So I want to give you the opportunity to reflect a little bit on the cabinet nominees and the confirmation hearings as they've been happening so far. You know some of these people very personally. Your thoughts on Trump's nominees and the hearing process as it has laid out so far?
Well, I was just listening to you coming in, and I guess I haven't really fully internalized how much this is a generational shift in the people that run America. Because at the top, we have, again, Donald Trump. And, of course, Trump is 78 years old. But underneath him, the people that he's chosen to lead with him are, yeah, a real step down, a real shift, a real change in the generation. I'm Gen X. I heard you say you're an older millennial.
Yeah.
I'm Gen X. We're the forgotten generation. But it's kind of our time as well, in a way. But you look across the board. You know, Michael Waltz, probably Gen X like me. Sean Duffy, Gen X like me. Pete Hegseth, an older millennial like you. All across the board, you're looking at a generational shift in who leads America.
I mean, I think that matters, too. We've seen, I was looking through the line of succession right just before the show started, and the president pro tem is going to be Chuck Grassley. I had to look that up. I mean, the Republicans have some older folks in there. He's 90, almost 92 this year, I think. Gen X, talk to me a little bit about that. I hear a lot of Gen Xers kind of coming out of the woodwork all of a sudden to say, hey, we're going to actually have a very vocal say in what happens next. Why is it important to have younger leadership?
Because I think you're more in touch with the direction of the future of the country. Okay, I'll give you two. So I just saw the news that Vivek Ramaswamy is going to run for governor of Ohio. That is a complete generational shift. When you look, and Ron DeSantis is in the same range. So in that older millennial Gen X range. So we're just seeing the turnover. Pete Hegseth. So here's a great example. So Pete, I mean, even visually looks different than the people who have run the Department of Defense for really most of the past half century, right?
Yes.
But it's not just like, oh, you look young. Pete has fought the last two wars that America's fought, Iraq and Afghanistan. He's in touch with the issues that have confronted warfighters for the past two decades. And he's therefore more in touch with the issues that are more immediate in the direction of America. And I think it's good. It's time. It's time for a fresh set of voices.
We're speaking with Will Kane, host of The Will Kane Show on 97.1 FM Talk, starting at 8 p.m. each night, but also going to be on Fox News. We get off the air here at 3 p.m., and you're going to be taking it up on the Fox News channel at 3 p.m., starting January 21st, which is very exciting. I'm glad you mentioned that about Pete Hegseth, because, Will, I was a senior in high school when 9/11 happened, and the way I often phrase that, I was as old as you can be as a kid and as young as you can be as an adult, and seeing something like that happen when you understand the gravity of it, but you are still clinging to what little bit of youth you have left. I always remind people, when there was trashing of the millennials for a long time, that those millennials are the ones who signed up to fight with the understanding of what terrorism was post 9/11 attacks. And Pete Hegseth, man, watching him champion these people who I have personally in my life, who have fought in Afghanistan, fought in the Middle East, and gone back again and again and again, and then watched what Joe Biden did to pull out there. It is good to see him restore the integrity to the military members to fight and say war fighter, because that's what these people are. How quickly will you see his implementation of what he wants to do as the Secretary of Defense? How quickly will the military reflect his goal for them?
I think it already has started. I think it started with his nomination. You're seeing recruitment numbers already go up. The United States military, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, they've all declined or not been able to achieve their recruiting numbers for years upon years upon years, including, by the way, things they're not capable of doing is hitting audits years upon years upon years. We already know that recruiting numbers have spiked with Pete coming in. I've known Pete a long time, like a decade, and I sat next to him for 5 years on the couch at Fox and Friends. And look, I mean, he's my friend, and I own that bias, but I try to be a self-aware person, and, you know, I don't know. I don't feel weird saying this about another man or one of my friends. Like, he inspires me in that when I look back on my life, it's one of the regrets of my life that I didn't serve the United States military. And if he makes me feel that way, imagine how many other people younger and still in the age demographic to serve he can inspire to feel that way while they can still do that. And I think that they will. And then beyond that, I think he's going to cut out the DEI woke. He's going to make it meritorious from day one. The thing about it is, like, why he hit a home run, Annie? He hit a home run, right? Grand slam in that hearing.
Yes.
And why is because he knows what he believes. Like, he knows it. It's not rote. It's not memorization. It's not, like, a script. He knows it. And he knows the focus of the United States military. And that means he will be quickly capable of focusing the United States military on being lethal and winning wars.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing him say at one point during his confirmation hearing that the purpose is to deter war when we can and to win wars when we can't. And I just, Pete Hegseth's confirmation hearing on the whole, he kept saying things that just my gut reaction was, oh, we don't talk like that anymore. And then he just goes full-fledged into it. I'm like, oh my gosh, talk more like this. We need more of this. The culture shift, it really is moving through Pete Hegseth and his commitment to Donald Trump's America First mentality.
I think it's funny that you said, ooh, we don't talk like this anymore. And you're right, though, because, I don't know, politicians, and you would include the Secretary of Defense as a politician, they're used to word salad. They play defense. They run afraid. Like, let me make sure I don't say anything that's going to turn you off or lose a vote or whatever it may be. Instead of speaking clearly and authoritatively with, like, this is my vision, this is who I am, and articulate that so strongly. And I, you're right. Like, it is like, ooh, we don't hear that very often. How awesome it is when we do hear it.
Yeah. And I'm just gearing up for 4 more years of America First with zero fear. No trembling in the voice whatsoever. Pete Hegseth has been a wonderful example of that. Before we let you go, we appreciate your time today. Will Kane with us right now. Talk to us about your new, we're here Central Time, so it'll be a 3 p.m. Central Time for the majority of our listeners. What's the Will Kane Show on Fox News Channel going to look like for viewers?
It's going to be 3 p.m. for me as well, Annie, because the show's going to be based out of Dallas, Texas.
Perfect.
Where I am from, where I live, yeah. And that's, of course, in part because that's me and who I am. And I'm so excited, by the way, so grateful that Fox has said, we want to do the Will Kane Show. Because they've said, we want you to do you, who you are. And I have one currency in this world, and that includes professionally, and that's authenticity. I just have to be real. I have to be who I am. And it's what I value when I see it in other people as well. Like, if we can start with real, then we can get to the truth. So it's a process. That's what this show is, a truth-seeking process. It'll be casual and professional. It'll be immediate and news-breaking, but it will be deep and analytical. It'll be fun, but it will also be serious when it needs to be. I want to have voices in that are disagree with me, because I believe that finding the truth is a process. I'm not Walter Cronkite. I don't believe in the idea that you sit behind a desk and now that you have a tie on and a microphone, you're the voice of God. But I know what I believe strongly, and I'm going to share that. And through that entire process, I hope that we can be something that is a breath of fresh air in the media, which is an authentic voice seeking the truth.
Well, we're excited to take that in, Will Kane, and for you to have been a part of the 97.1 family here from at 8 p.m. on our station. And so congratulations to you. We will be tuning in for sure. And thank you for some time today on a Friday afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Will Kane of The Will Kane Show, debuting on Fox News Channel, January 21st, the day after the Inauguration Day. And also, of course, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, starting at 3 p.m. our time. Very cool. Glad to have him on the show. And he does know Pete Hegseth very, very well and has been a staunch defender of his. The thing about specifically Pete's confirmation hearing, and if you're going to hear different speak when it comes to the person who wants to be the Secretary of Defense, these are people who know things about the world. The real, raw, disgusting, deplorable, depraved things that take place in the world, they're the ones who have to keep that from coming to our shores. They have to keep that at bay. And there are so many people, Gen Xers, millennials, who have taken up the fight in the wake of the boomers who did that in various wars during their time. They answered the call, they showed up. And of course, the Greatest Generation that protected us during world wars from Nazi dictators. And I'm talking about like the real kinds of Nazi dictators. It's refreshing to see Pete Hegseth and the way he speaks. It's one of the first times that I've really seen a true defense of the people who come from my time, or maybe a little bit before my time, who have gone out and fought with the American flag on their sleeve or with the American flag in their heart because they were called to duty. Pete Hegseth represents that to me. And, you know, it does make a difference, I think, when you see somebody who has seen the things that your peers have seen. It doesn't make it any less valuable when the person doing that is of a different generation, of course. But when you do see it yourself, I think it does. I think it touches, it strikes a different chord. I made the same comment. When we talk about representation mattering, I think it was when Nikki Haley was running in the primary. And of course, Kamala Harris eventually down the line, but the Nikki Haley thing was taking place when Joe Biden was still the Democratic nominee. Nikki Haley was running for president, and my probably then 7-year-old, maybe 8-year-old at the time, looked at me and said, "Mom, can girls be president too?" And I just looked at her and said, "They sure can." And then it was like, oh, it just sparked the question in her mind. She probably had never, ever before had the thought in her mind, well, I guess only boys can be president. But it wasn't until she saw a female making the case as to why she should be the president that it occurred to her that, oh, yeah, girls can do that, too. And then after that, I think she probably went on to like do her hair or something. It was not like it was life changing. And now she's trying to take over the world as an 8-year-old. You know, it's not that dramatic. But when you see representation, that matters. I think the follow-up question was, Mommy, do you want her to be the president? And my answer was likely more than I want Joe Biden to be the president. And that might have been it, because I don't tend to talk politics with my especially younger children too much. Representation, it's kind of like the really sad ending to DEI, because, folks, I think DEI is ending. The mentality that all people should be included in conversations of being able to participate in, you know, offices, boardrooms, businesses, places where you hold office, like, of course. It's not so much, you can't really force inclusion, but you can try to eliminate exclusion. Isn't there a difference when... Isn't there a difference when you open up the opportunity to everybody and then have an open mind about who the best person is for the position? I don't really know of any places that are exclusionary in who they're willing to hire. My experiences have been they want the best. I'm a female. I work in a predominantly male industry. I don't think that I've ever been held back because I'm female. I worked in sports radio before I worked in news talk radio. That is simply and solely anecdotal. It's not a scientific study on the issue. But I think the idea is that we want to hire people into positions that hire people into positions where their goal is always to hire the best for the company, because the best for the company, regardless of race, color, creed, any of that stuff, is going to ultimately help the bottom line of said company. Which means you should never exclude in those hiring practices, because you might leave the best on the other side of the door. And it's one of the great ironies that the effort for inclusion required the exclusion of people who were not deemed reasonable to apply. And that's going away. It's good to see a diverse group of people in any situation, but never because of the exclusion of other people. Never because you told other people you need not apply. And I think we're getting to the right balance of that, God willing, on the other side of Monday. A quick break. When we come back, we'll get Ryan Wiggins in studio, including next question. We want to know what you would like to hear us answer. We've got a few questions ourselves, and you can participate in the Annie Fry YouTube live chat. Thank you to Will Kane for joining us. And you can check that interview on the podcast if you so choose. Ask us anything. Next question, next on the Annie Fry Show.
Next question.
Question.
It's a legitimate question.
Next question.
Next question, please.
Next question on the Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. I was just listening to something on the way in here, and it was Kamala Harris talking about, it's kind of like a wrap-up thing with maybe some staff, and it was videoed or whatever. And she was like, we don't need to list all of our accomplishments. We've done that. We've spent so much time together. And after every completion of a thought, she laughed.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought, hand to God. Thank you, Jesus. I forget how abrasive that was and would have been, and we don't have to deal with it. I'm very excited about
it. Yeah, the problem with it is that everybody knows that that's a crutch, and that's okay, but if you're the Vice President of the United States, you just need to be able to communicate a little more effectively.
It's not okay to have such public crutches as the President of the United States.
That's what I mean. Is everybody's got these things, but man, when you're the Vice President,
here's
you got to get through it.
My first question, what is Donald Trump's biggest weakness crutch?
Policy, like speaking wise,
anything.
Or anything?
Well, where is his greatest weakness? Because thinking about this, most of his weaknesses he's made into strengths. You know, I took a screenshot of his True Social post where he was going through all, he's like, do me a favor, don't send me your people like Bird Brain and Nikki Haley and all these things. I think that his name calling might be his biggest crutch, but I just don't know if it matters anymore because he won.
Yeah, that's kind of the spot we're in. Like, because he won, .. A lot of that stuff doesn't matter as much, but it does matter to how he's going to govern for the next 4 years. I would say his biggest crutch or his Achilles heel is, and again, this also has its positives though, is his ego. But it's concerning things like crowd size, mm-hmm. and stuff that doesn't really matter, popularity, that his enemies, and we saw this during the debates and when people go up against him, they'll throw that out there as bait, and he will take it every time. So I would say that's a crutch for him because it's so obvious.
Just to interject here, Eric Schmidt on X said, this was a big week for confirmation hearings and the inauguration of real Donald Trump is just a few days away on a plane shooting your questions. So I DM'd him and said, how quickly do you think we'll see confirmations? And then he wrote back, landing in 20. Want me to call in? And he also tweeted out a picture with Donald Trump, RFK Jr., and somebody else who I can't remember because I'm not on this page right now. So do we want him to call in?
Yes, we do.
We'll just tell him, like, when I'm going to DM him back and say, well, whenever you're ready.
He's sitting with these people?
He's on Trump Force One, I think. His picture is RFK Jr. Is it maybe Senator Mark? Is it Mullion?
Mark Wayne
Mulligan? Something like that.
He's the MMA-looking dude?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. From Oklahoma.
Oh, yes, please. Okay. Trump's biggest crutch. Maybe they're listening right now. I think he's great. I think he's perfect. I think he's flawless. And like I said, none of it matters because he won.
Yeah. Mr. Trump, if this is your first exposure to the Andy Frye Show.
I'm like literally my heart's starting to beat faster.
We're big fans. We've been with you since 2015. We want you to know that. We're glad to be on the airplane with you now.
Brad?
Oh. He's perfect. He's great. He's amazing. I don't know. I can't dig into, like, too much, like, personality-wise, because I don't really know him, so I only know the persona that is Donald Trump. And a lot of the stuff that I found, like, abrasive initially has kind of become endearing to me. And, like, even, like, his rhetoric, the way he uses the words, like, huge and bigly, I like that now. Like, before, it's like, I didn't really like that. But when you listen to it, it's a style, and it's something that's only Donald Trump. So it's really hard for me to answer that question.
Here, I'll answer it one more in one more way, you know, just in case. I want to see a president who is super, super, super fiscally conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is of paramount concern to the nation, the future of the nation.
To the guy who's like Doge?
I mean, you know what? That's very true.
We're in our early 40s. We've never seen government get smaller.
And this is the time. This 100 days. I think they know that.
We've talked about this many times before, like pre this election cycle. When we're talking with Steve Moore every Monday, when we're having conversations about the economy, it's like, oh, all these big government Democrats, blah, blah, blah. We're like, well, what about the big government Republicans? I.e. swamp,
uh-huh.
I.e. drain it.
Mm-hmm.
Next question.
Well, it's not as good as that one, but...
He's not listening. Don't.
I'm not listening. When you're seeking out movies, you know, you sit down at night to finally watch something. Is there a particular genre of movie that you seek out?
Movies, no. I usually look for TV shows.
Okay.
And this is going to sound
real. Same question, though.
Like, everybody's going to go, whenever I say this, but I like to find good anime TV shows because I think that there's really good storytelling in them, and they touch on topics that aren't usually touched on. But everybody just went, he's a weeb right now, so.
He's a what?
A weeb.
No, I don't think we did do that.
Is weeb a used word in anime?
No, it's a
I don't
word.
Know what that is.
It's a word used to describe people who are like huge anime fans. I don't go to the conventions. I'm very selective about which ones I watch.
I flew with the furry ones.
But
that's documented.
And
that's
is that kinda, the same?
And that's where I'm going with this.
it's the same exact thing as watching
They do
anime.
Conventions the same. It's just a TV show, and the medium of telling it is having it animated versus having actual physical actors.
It's just a lifestyle, Ryan. Relax.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything about it.
No, he watches anime. What do you watch?
Thrillers.
Thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Do you dance?
No.
I sit down, and it is the God's honest truth, you can ask my kids. One time, I think it was maybe around Mother's Day, your little kids sit down with like a teacher or a parent helper, and they fill out, it's almost like a Mad Lib about you or whatever. Tell me three things your mom loves. And it was like... they said salads, Fox News, and me. And I'm like, I don't even like salads.
I didn't know if you did. I was like, okay.
Well, I eat a lot of salads because I always try to stay healthy, so I'm always eating salads, and I don't love them. It's a labor of necessity, not love. But the three things my kids said I love: salads, Fox News, and me. At least they thought they were included at the same level as salads and Fox News.
Well, I'm glad to know that your kids are on the same level as Fox News.
Rude. If I sit down at night, I'm watching Jesse Waters. I will try to watch Gutfeld, too. It kind of depends on the timing since it's bedtime, usually. So we're trying to... it's harder to watch Gutfeld on DVR because it happens later. Like, that's what I would be watching live. So sometimes my kids will watch it with me, but I can't always watch it with my kids. Just gonna be honest. If I'm watching a movie, it's probably just it's anything I've seen before and enjoy. I'm never watching anything new.
You're never watching new movies?
Not if I'm just sitting down in the middle of the night, like, or in the evening. There's no way that I'm gonna be able to watch that movie uninterrupted. I need to be able to come in the middle of A Few Good Men, and I'm just waiting for your gosh darn right I did.
I don't think that's a direct quote.
It isn't.
Okay.
The direct quote is FCC non-compliant.
Man.
Did you order the Code Red? Your gosh darn right I did.
Did you see somebody replaced Jack Nicholson with Pete Hegseth's face?
Oh, no.
From that scene? It's pretty good.
Pete Hegseth could be a young Jack Nicholson if he really wanted to.
Well, well, well.
Hmm.
Here we are.
So I'm watching something that I know and that I'm comfortable with, so that it's something I like, is familiar, and when I jump into the middle of it, it feels like I didn't miss anything, and when I leave and don't see the ending, I won't wonder what happened.
I'm going to throw out a streaming suggestion just because we're talking about it. There's a movie called, it's a Nicolas Cage movie. You've probably seen it, you know, more people have seen it than have not. It's called The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
It's a biography?
Yeah. It's Nicolas Cage. It was like I was reading the script about my life.
Oh, I think I've actually heard about that.
They've memed that one.
It is such a good movie.
Is that the one with the Mandalorian guy in it?
Yeah. Pedro Pascal.
Where Nicolas Cage is sitting in there being serious and Pedro Pascal's having the time of his life.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm familiar. That's good?
It's so good because they're taking a lot of chances with a movie, and a lot of times that doesn't pay off, but in this one it does.
Movie or show?
Movie. It was made just in 2022, so it's not that old. And about halfway through the movie, it's so wild because you're watching a movie and it keeps changing genres where you're like, what is happening? About halfway through, you realize that those two characters are writing a movie. And you might be watching the movie they're writing.
What was that show about? And Joey was in it. Joey Tribbiani. But the real actor's name is Matt LeBlanc. He was in a show that was about Matt LeBlanc as an actor. And Matt LeBlanc was starring in a show.
He was playing himself?
Yes. And it was...
I don't know what this is, but it sounds
familiar.
Probably
not something that you watch with your kids. But I enjoyed it. I remember that. And it was like British. It was a British show.
Huh. No, I don't know what it is then.
Next question, Brad.
Yeah, so along those movie lines, is there a movie that you associate with a certain event or big time in your life, and did it change how you view that movie? So, like, feel great about it, and every time you watch a movie, it recalls those things?
Do you have an example?
I do.
Why don't you go first?
Okay, so the last movie, the night that I had my heart attack, I had taken the youth group to see Marvel's Avengers, and being a Marvel...
Avengers, which was that the first
Avengers? The first Avengers movie. And as a Marvel fan, I loved it. That was kind of like the culmination of everything that I was hoping of. And it was great, and I loved it, and I was always looking forward to it. To this day, I cannot watch that movie because it just reminds me of what had happened that night, and I can't do it anymore. Which is really weird because I love all of the other movies.
Now you can understand the association. It's probably just PTSD from it.
The question is a movie you can't watch?
What, no. It affects you significantly, and it changed how you saw the movie. Like, you associate that movie with a certain event in your life.
Ooh, man.
And it doesn't have to be negative. It can be a positive event as well.
This is so lame, but I remember sitting and watching Billy Madison when I was 14.
Go on.
And saying, this movie's changing my young life right now. I never thought you could make a joke where in one scene a guy is completely engulfed in flames and the next he's just fine. I couldn't believe it. I don't know that that's what you're looking for out of this question. But
now, going back and watching that movie again, do you think about that time?
Yes,
and
I
how
do.
Has that changed your?
I do. I still think about being in my parents' house on the living room floor.
Stop looking at me, Swan.
14 years old, going, what's happening right now? This is amazing.
I once had my kid ask me was, what's the difference between shampoo and conditioner?
Oh, great!
And I like explained it. Without the shampoo is better. Without saying it like that. And they were completely satisfied with their responses. I found that to be wonderful.
You make the hair silky and smooth.
Yeah, it's weird. I was chuckling while I was doing it. They didn't understand why the explanation was funny, and I didn't tell them. I don't know. I'm not really like a movie.
It's tough.
A movie person.
Question.
I'll tell you a song that affected me. The As I Lay Me Down, which is that What's Her Face sang it in the 1996
I know the song.
Or 7, whatever.
I can't
Sophie
think of
B. Hawkins.
Yes.
I had that on in my Discman on my way up to Chicago in March of 1997, and my whole family got into a car accident, and our minivan was going 65 miles an hour north on 55, and we got into an accident. The semi-truck drivers that pulled over to help pull us out of the car and stuff said we probably rolled 6 to 9 times going up the highway, and that song was in my headphones when I played it, or when that happened, and so... When I hear that song, I think of that. I still listen to the song, but it's kind of a... I think songs are probably more accessible in that type of a situation than movies, maybe on the whole. But let's take a quick break. We'll take more questions when we come back. We are also looking to connect to Eric Schmidt, maybe in the 2 o'clock hour or whenever he gives us a call. We're going to put him on the show as he is saying that... Votes will start next week in earnest. Will take weeks. We'll get a little bit more information from Senator Eric Schmidt when he gives us a call and take more of your questions. When we come back. Don't go away.
The Annie Fry Show is streaming online. Watch us live on YouTube and subscribe.
Getting even further south.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. We've been doing our Friday Ask Us Anything, where we talk about whatever you want to ask us. You send us your questions on the Annie Fry YouTube channel, and we will go through those one at a time and getting to the next question now. I've got one for you guys. Would your spouse appreciate you more, and or would you appreciate your spouse more if you shadowed them for a day doing your job or their job? How much does your spouse know about your daily life versus how much you know about theirs?
I think I know her schedule a little bit more because her schedule involves our kids. So once I leave the house, she doesn't have any idea what I'm doing at work. But I know a little bit more about what she's doing because
you might know where
kids.
She is, but do you know what she's doing and what it takes to do her job?
At any given moment, I don't know, but I know, I know where she's at, but I don't know what she's teaching.
Like that's the thing here, though. Like you're talking about her as a wife and a parent and her location because you need to know. Like I know on a regular day, I can call my husband at this time or this time or this time because he's got prep period or he's in passing or whatever lunch. I do not know professionally what my husband has to do minute by minute in order to do his job well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that he does his job well. He's been named the department chair or whatever of his department. And I know that he has had success in being an educator. But sometimes the stories I hear about what students that he has have to deal with and just the complications, it makes me think like, I know for a fact I could not do what he does.
Mm-hmm. I think my wife and I would both equally learn about each other's jobs if we'd shadowed each other for a day. Because I think we both generally understand what each other does, but seeing it in action is different.
Who has to work harder?
She does. She does because she has to think more about everything going on because she's with the kids than I do. Like, she just has more on her plate.
Your children or students?
Everything. Like, she has she has to...
I'm talking professionally.
Just professionally?
Yeah.
I still think she does because she has to prep more. I mean, I have to do a lot of prep here, but it's not... It's like news. You know, we have to pay attention to the news. And when I'm hosting, I have to craft a show differently, which I respect that you have to do every day. I come in here and react. So in that sense, I don't have to prep that. I just have to know what's going on.
What do you think, Brad?
My wife is very curious about what I do because it's really hard to explain what a producer does on a radio show outside of, like, it's an apropos title, produce the show. But I think that she would have a better understanding of it. But my wife is an amazing person, and I don't know what I could do to make her respect me more. And I had a ton of things that I know that I could do to make her respect me less, but she is such a great person in that sense. And then, like, to know what she does on a daily basis, I have a small idea because I was a substitute teacher, and I was a substitute teacher at her school. I never substituted her class, so I never got to meet her students or get a good feel for what her class was like. But to your point, to know what the kids go through, to be on top of everything that goes there, to understand that you're responsible for those 25 to 30 kids each day, each hour, new group of kids, that their education, their safety, and their well-being is your responsibility, that's way more difficult than what I do here on the show.
Jared would have a good idea of what I do every day because he did TV radio before he became a teacher. I think what people wouldn't understand, because there's nothing about what we do that is really adjacent to normal life. It's a very weird thing. I was a pharmacy technician for a while, and I gained so much knowledge about pharmaceuticals, different prescriptions, generic names of, you know, medicines that really do the exact same thing as the name brands, insurance situations that people have. And when I quit working in a pharmacy, it was like 6 months, and all of that just went away because nothing that I did there was normal people's stuff. It was super industry-related stuff. I think what we do on a regular basis here is so fast-paced that it becomes very difficult to keep up with. Like, for instance, if you're hosting a show and you're DMing the Missouri State Senator...
Hypothetically,
because they're like, hey, I'm on a plane with the president, ask me questions. And you sit there and you're like, okay, well, I'm asking Ryan Wiggins questions right now. Maybe I will send a quick message to Senator Eric Schmidt and see what he has to say. And then he's like, how about I come on the show? And then he does, which is just absolutely amazing. Senator Eric Schmidt back on with us. Thank you for the time today and answering that DM. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Sure. No, I was on the plane, and instead of doing like real work that my staff gave me, with my takeout binder, I just decided to be on X and do like a Q&A. So yeah, I was. So anyway, I just landed and back in St. Louis. So I figured I'd call. Absolutely.
Well, we're very glad to have you. I want to ask you about the confirmation process, which was the question that I did send you. We're going to see now moved indoors, the inauguration taking place on Monday. How quickly after that are we going to have a Secretary of State, a Defense Secretary, an Attorney General, and so on?
So I think next week, for the confirmation hearings that we had this week, so Pete Hegseth for Department of Defense, Pam Bondi, AG, Marco Rubio, Christine Ohm, Doug Burgum for Energy, I think the ones that you saw this week will get votes next week. That's my hope. I know that I think Marco Rubio's teed up for actually Inauguration Day on Monday.
Good.
So, yeah, we're looking to move that quickly to make sure, especially on the national security team, to have that in place. There's obviously a lot of threats around the world, and so we want to make sure the president's got his team in place quickly. So, and then after that, you know, we'll move on. I think, you know, Kash Patel will be in front of the committee before the end of the month, in front of the Judiciary Committee that I'm on. So I think we're gonna try to move quickly.
Senator Eric Schmidt on with us right now. Do you feel as though there's any, is there going to be a struggle to get any of these confirmations through once the votes actually happen?
I don't think so. I mean, we don't need any Democrat votes to do it. I've not heard of any Republicans, Senate Republicans, you know, as no votes on anyone yet. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. But I would point out historically, it'd be really rare, actually, if there was. I mean, since Bill Clinton, there's only been three no votes. Not like you know, confirmations that went awry, but just no votes altogether on any nominees of a president from the same political party as the Senate. So I think that generally speaking, you're going to get broad discretion for the president to put his team together, his or her team together, and President Trump certainly earned that right with the mandate that he got on November 5th.
Senator, I remember hearing Senator Whitehouse's commentary to Pam Bondi, and the really slow, he has, I don't know, bifocals, so he's got his head down and he's kind of looking up. It's a weird presentation when he's saying something to the potential next Attorney General of the United States, Pam Bondi. You would deem it to be inappropriate to find a name and then find a crime and then invoke the inverse as being the appropriate way of going about it. How do you react as a former attorney general, now senator, when you hear the Democrats very boldly say something so hypocritical like that?
Well, in that committee hearing, I was there. It was like you were in an alternate universe.
Right.
You were sort of like, what world have the Democrats been living in over the last 4 years to have that kind of sudden concern or find religion on the independence of the attorney general? I made sure I made the point that Eric Holder, I mean, this isn't a new phenomenon for the Democrats. Eric Holder referred to himself as Obama's heat shield and his wingman. Loretta Lynch, when she was AG under Obama, briefed Bill Clinton on the tarmac about it in the ongoing investigation of Hillary Clinton's emails 2 days before her FBI interview. So, like, spare me the outrage. And then, of course, the last 4 years, what we've seen under Merrick Garland was exactly that, a Soviet-style form of justice, which was show me the man, I'll show you the crime. These zombie cases were resurrected. Jack Smith, who's, you know, totally disgraced, overzealous prosecutor, was charged essentially with putting President Trump in jail so he couldn't win the election. And they failed. They absolutely failed. All this lawfare, I think people rejected. The American people didn't want to see it. Pam Bondi, I've known for years from AG World. I got a chance to introduce her on Wednesday, when that was, Wednesday. She's great. She'll restore credibility. She's fair. She's tough. She's smart. And, you know, she can't get in there a moment too soon.
We're speaking with Senator Eric Schmidt. Very grateful to have you on the phone with us here. A little impromptu conversation, as you have said, you've landed back in St. Louis. I want to know about your conversations in the hearing there with Pete Hegseth. You went hard in on the DEI. And, you know, if there's anywhere DEI should not be plaguing the system, you would think it would be under the responsibilities of the Secretary of Defense. Is Pete Hegseth going to get the job done to get DEI out of our military right away?
Absolutely. I think he's totally committed to it. We had that conversation in my office about a month ago, and I wanted to make sure I had a chance to ask him about it in the public hearing. I mean, he's really committed to it. He understands how destructive this divisive ideology is. There's no place in our military. You shouldn't be dividing the room by race. And I pointed out just a few examples. The Air Force Academy had discouraged language, including mom and dad. You're not supposed to say mom and dad. You're not supposed to say we're all just people. I mean, this is totally insane. And somehow it's infected our military, and there's no place there. And so I think he's going to root it out. And it's hurting recruiting. I think that's, you know, the ultimate repercussion here is numbers are down. I think, Pete, one of the great things I think Pete Hegseth is going to do is I think you're going to see recruiting numbers go up. It's going to be the armed forces that we can all be proud of. And look, the men and women who serve, this is not their fault. This is coming from the political class that's being pushed down. And it doesn't matter what room it is, Annie. It can be a barracks or a classroom. They're obsessed with this stuff.
Yes.
They're obsessed with DEI. They're obsessed with critical race theory. It's Marxist ideology. And I think he's going to get rid of it. Now, I actually think you're going to see you're going to see a flurry of executive orders mostly on the border, but you're going to see it on other stuff, too. I wouldn't be surprised if President Trump on day one just says they're all gone. I've got legislation to say no more DEI offices, no more DEI positions in the federal government. I think he's going to do it by executive order, too.
Well, Senator, we don't have much time left with you, just about a minute left here. But we do know that the inauguration has been moved indoors. Frigid 12 degree temperatures in Washington, D.C. on Monday. Will you be there? And do you feel as though that this is going to go off without a hitch, safe, secure, get straight down to business during the inauguration?
Yeah, I mean, the city's on lockdown. I'm flying back for a father-daughter dance tonight, and then we are going to go back up the family this weekend. So I'll be there Monday. It'll be my first inauguration, too. I've never actually been to one, so it'll be kind of neat. But, yeah, the city's on lockdown. I think it's they're taking every precaution necessary. This was, strictly weather-related. And I don't know. I mean, it was done, I guess, in 1985 in Reagan's second inaugural. It was inside. But we are going to try to push out information. We've gotten a lot of requests from Missourians to attend. And we've, you know, given out a bunch of tickets for people to be able to go do that. And so we're going to try to keep people informed as to what the actual deal is. I think all the inside events, like there's a rally on Sunday afternoon. There's all the inaugural balls that happen throughout the weekend. And on Monday, those are still happening. But I think, you know, the actual, you know, swearing in and all that stuff, which is outside where you've got on the Capitol Mall and on the Capitol steps, that'll be different. That'll be moved inside. So there are going to be some changes, but we'll try to keep people on the loop.
Senator Eric Schmidt, we appreciate your time. We can't wait to talk to you again and again and again, because so much is going to be happening and you're going to be right there at the epicenter of it. So thanks for squeezing us into your schedule right after you landed back here home.
Sure thing. All right. Take care.
Take Bye-bye. Care. You as well. Bye-bye. Senator Eric Schmidt sent him a DM on X, and he was obliged to offer to come on the show. Coming back home for a daddy-daughter dance.
And then back to the Capitol on Monday.
Gosh,
or Sunday.
Can this guy be more likable?
It's pretty cool.
All right. Well, that is next question with your Missouri senator. And we got some interesting things happening in the 2 o'clock hour. Like I said a little bit earlier, just a little bit of a development in late night television. And in a way, it involves Ryan Wiggins.
I still don't know what the heck you're talking about.
He said to me literally off air, he goes, is this something I'm really going to get excited for, or is this just radio? I just looked at him like, are you serious?
She didn't answer the question.
No, I was
forced her to answer the question online.
Don't act like you come here to just be faux entertained. You're the entertainer. Oh my gosh. Well, I guess we'll find out next. Don't go away.